Residents of rural communities in western Wisconsin face unique challenges when it comes to health care. While nearly 25% of Wisconsinites live in rural areas, only about 10% of physicians practice there. With an aging population, increased demand, and rising costs for rural patients and providers alike, some clinics and hospitals across the nation have closed, leaving communities without health care close to home. Aside from their importance to the health of individuals, healthcare organizations can play a critical role in the economic health of rural areas generally. With so much at stake, how are healthcare providers here in Western Wisconsin adapting to the changing needs and resources of rural medicine? Thank you for tuning in this Monday morning on Ideas 88.3 and 88.7. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is The West Side. We've got four guests for the discussion today. They are, in no particular order, Greg Nitsch. He is the Executive Director of Family Health Center of the Family Health Center in Marshfield, Incorporated, a partner of Marshfield Clinic. He has been involved with the health center for over four decades and works to offer care to rural and low-income populations. His special focus in recent years has been addressing oral health disparities. Greg Nitsch, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Dr. Ashok Rai is president and CEO of Prevea Health. He practices internal medicine in Green Bay and has served as Prevea's president since 2009. Prevea operates health centers throughout the state and partners with hospitals, including St. Joseph's Hospital in Chippewa Falls and Sacred Heart Hospital in Eau Claire. Dr. Ashok Rai, welcome to the West Side.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Joining us by phone, we welcome Ryan Neville. He's the Chief Administrative Officer of Marshfield Medical Center in Neillsville. He has worked in the healthcare field since 1997, including 11 years in western Wisconsin. He is the former president and CEO of Memorial Medical Center in Neillsville, which completed its affiliation with Marshfield Clinic Health System this past December. Ryan Neville, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. And finally, joining us from our studios in Madison is Dr. Joseph Holt. He is the director of the Wisconsin Academy of Rural Medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health in Madison. He's served as director since 2018, and he spent the first decade of his medical career practicing internal medicine in Ladysmith, Wisconsin, before moving to UW Hospital in Madison. Dr. Joseph Holt, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. Listeners, what's your take on the accessibility and affordability of healthcare for rural residents? If you live in a smaller community, do you trust that you can get the care that you need when you need it? Why or why not? Share your questions and your comments by giving us a call at 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. So to start things off, I think we'll go round robin for a bit. Each guest is welcome to briefly introduce themselves, their organizations, and their specific work that they do within those organizations to address rural health care. So, you know, what are the bullet points that listeners need to know to better understand who we're talking with and what they do before we launch into a more focused conversation? Dr. Rai, I'll start with you.
Great. Well, as you mentioned, I am the president and CEO at Prevea Health, and Prevea is a multi-specialty group. Half the company is actually owned by its physicians, the other half by Hospital Sisters Health System locally, St. Joe's and Sacred Heart here. And for the past 5 years, at the invitation of the sisters, we've worked with those two hospitals in identifying needs in the surrounding community, specifically the rural needs. Whether they be primary care or specialty related, and how best can we fill those needs. In some cases, it's partnering with existing facilities and sending our physicians out there to help bolster areas that they could be lacking. And in other areas, it's to literally build physical buildings and recruit physicians to the area where we felt that there was a need or where we've been invited to do so. Mm-hmm. So our focus really has been not only on taking care of the Chippewa Valley, as we think about it, from the Falls to Eau Claire, but really well outside of that, from Arcadia all the way up to Ladysmith.
Thank you for that. Greg Nitsch, I'll start with you, or go next to you.
Yeah, I'm the executive director of Family Health Center of Marshfield. I report to a community board that consists of the majority of low-income users of our program. And we're part of 1,400 community health centers nationwide that serve about 28 million, mostly low-income and minority populations. And our goal is basically to eliminate health disparities. So people who have difficulty because of geography, distance to care, difficulty because of cultural issues or language issues, or if they have difficulty getting care because of financial issues, which is a big one, they can come to us and we have programs that will help them get the care they need at a level that they can afford. And as you mentioned, oral health has been a priority. 20 years ago, the Surgeon General delivered the first ever report on oral health of the nation. Your listeners may be interested to know that Wisconsin is among one of the worst states in the nation in providing dental care to low-income children. Most of the southern states are ahead of us. I think there's only the latest data, there's only two states in the nation that have a poorer record in delivering dental care to low-income children. So my board took note of that, and we've been pushing access points. We have 10 dental centers with generally about 5 to 10 dentists at each center. And we've cared for, since we started the initiative, about 164,000 people, and they come from every corner of the state of Wisconsin. We get patients driving 500-mile round trips to get dental care with us, which is testament to how bad the access barriers are for dental care.
That is something I did not know, is that is how we rank in terms of offering that. That's something else. Thank you for that. Let me go to Dr. Holt now with the Wisconsin Academy of Rural Medicine. Tell us a little bit about what you do day to day.
Sure. As you mentioned, I'm the director of the WARM program, the Wisconsin Academy for Rural Medicine. And I started in July with the retirement of Dr. Byron Krause, who started the program about 10 years ago. The program has been just remarkably successful at getting students into rural areas as physicians in Wisconsin, and that's the goal we're shooting for. Essentially, the UW-Madison's medical school and medical schools in general have about a 10% rate of placing students in rural areas as physicians just through their traditional programs. But when you use a rural training program like WARM, those rates go up to 50%. So we've got a fivefold higher rate of getting docs in the needed areas of rural Wisconsin compared to traditional programs. So that's what where I am and what we've been working on. Clearly, rural Wisconsin has a huge deficit in terms of healthcare and having docs in the right spots to take care of people. So the program's goal is to try to mitigate that, try to improve that over time.
Thank you for that. And let's go now to Ryan Neville over in Neillsville. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you provide care to those in rural, kind of central western Wisconsin.
Well, thank you. Yeah. We're essentially a critical access hospital, 25-bed hospital with around 20 employee providers here locally. Level 3 trauma program all the way through, outpatient services. So, you know, our biggest initiative going forward is meeting the needs of our community specifically. We're one of the poorest counties in the state, and we have some significant health disparities. So we're trying to address those at every situation we can with whatever partners we are able to do that. My day-to-day operations is really maintain those relationships to bring the best care possible locally and try to put together innovative programs to do such.
Thank you for that. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got questions or comments on this issue. We're talking about rural health care options and the challenges not only for patients but also for providers. We're speaking with Greg Nitsch, director of the Family Health Center at within the Marshfield Health System, Dr. Ashok Rai, president of and CEO of Prevea Health, Dr. Joseph Holt, Wisconsin Academy of Rural Medicine in Madison, and Ryan Neville, Chief Administrative Officer, Marshfield Medical Center, Neillsville. 1-800-228-5615. We'd love to hear what you've got to say. How do we even define rural? I mean, it's kind of a tricky... We think we know what it means, but what is the specific definition when it comes to healthcare? Let me start with Greg Nitsch.
Well, census definition of rural is a community of under 2,500. Mm-hmm. Your listeners may be more interested in a down-to-earth definition. My definition of rural is if you come to a four-way stop sign and you wave to the three other people at the other stop sign, you're in rural.
Sure.
And
well, by that measure.
Yeah, and the federal government provides some loan repayment support, and the state has a loan repayment program also to try to encourage providers of all types to locate in rural and underserved areas and inner city areas. And that's a really important program that people should know something about. And one of the things you could note if you went to the Office of Rural Health in Wisconsin, they have maps that show the areas that are underserved. And by that, they mean they're far from optimal in the number of providers per population. And dental is just almost most of the entire western part of the state, all the rural counties.
So we're talking about any dental offerings, not, or are we talking specifically with surgical?
We're saying that there are not enough dentists who care for, say, low-income populations, given the number of people that are out there. That's also true for mental health, and to a lesser extent, it's also true for primary care physicians.
Okay. We had a caller that wasn't able to stay on the line, but Cindy from Eau Claire called and wanted to talk about the status of telemedicine in rural Wisconsin and rural in general. So telemedicine, for those who don't know what that means, Dr. Ashok Rai, what is it?
So there's a variety of different ways that we provide telehealth care and all the systems. You know, sometimes it's just a video visit with a behavioral care specialist. As complicated as our telestroke program, where there's literally a for lack of better words, a rolling robot in a rural hospital, mm-hmm. and a neurologist that is able to diagnose the stroke through working with the local ER physician, the robot, and provide life-saving advice within minutes where it used to be hours. Hmm. So, for example, if you're coming in with a stroke and there's a decision if you should get, for lack of better words, a clot-busting drug to help you, that decision can now be in under 15 minutes versus trying to get a neurologist to come out to a rural area or have that patient's care delayed by having them transferred to another area without the care being given first. So there's a large gamut of telehealth that's being available out there, and it continues to be developed. We've seen tele-ICU, tele-stroke, tele-psych. There are some limitations to it. One of the limitations, I think, that's pointed out throughout the country is a way to pay for it, because it's not a typical visit. So the government and insurers at times don't consider it a real visit or real healthcare, so they won't pay for it. So then the investments are difficult for health systems to make, but still needed. But there's a variety of other ways that we can work through that through locally based providers. I think we're only starting to see the beginning of tele in the state of Wisconsin. One of the other limitations is, as most people probably don't realize, is that when you're a physician and you get your state license in Wisconsin, it means nothing in Minnesota, and right. It means nothing in Michigan. So, and a lot of us provide care outside of our state borders, which means you need physicians licensed in every state, and that includes for tele. Mm-hmm. So it's that whole licensing credentialing process. So there are a couple things in the country as far as movements to see the expansion of telecare. One is to get it for the government to pay for it. I recently met in Washington, D.C. on this topic, and that's going to be a very long road. There's some experiments in the state of Wisconsin going on, but the federal government is still pretty resistant. And secondly, there is a movement out there for reciprocity, amongst bordering states when it comes to medical licensure to help provide that service too a little bit more effectively. But it can be anything from a FaceTime visit, for a lack of, you know, for to use a term, to providing care. We do it even in weight loss situations where we can provide coaching for weight loss through telemedicine, all the way up to tele-ICU, telestroke, telecardiology, all programs that we have throughout the state right now.
Very interesting. And I hadn't even thought about the reciprocity issue, because we've got so many people in our listening area that are right up the line.
Yeah. And so the states are working through that. And the federal government continues through the Department of Health and Human Services look at telehealth. Unfortunately, the Congressional Budget Office looks at telehealth as an expense and not as a savings. Mm-hmm. And until the CBO can score it as a savings for America, it makes it much harder to get funding for it approved. Yeah. And that's probably the single largest barrier in Washington right now to the expansion of telehealth, is the perspective of the people who score a bill from the expense standpoint look at telehealth as just an added cost and not as a savings for the healthcare system, which those of us who practice and provide care know it's a significant savings.
Yeah.
But to demonstrate that to the CBO has been very difficult.
That's so interesting. The CBO is like the federal version of what we have in Wisconsin, the Legislative Fiscal Bureau. I mean, basically, for lack of a better term, some accountants that look at this stuff. That's wild.
Yeah, they're actuaries, and they sit there, and they all they can do is go with the evidence in front of them. So it's no sure. individual's fault, but
right.
because there's no solid evidence yet on true cost savings through implementation of tele, it's kind of a chicken or egg situation. You still need the funding to develop it, and that's where I see the state of Wisconsin, you know, leading the country, where we're starting to do more of that and getting state grants to do it. But until you can prove it, they have to score it the other way around.
Sure. Wild. 1-800-228-5615 if you've got questions or comments about rural health care. I want to go to Dr. Joseph Holt of the Wisconsin Academy of Rural Medicine in Madison again. And, you know, the health professional shortage areas, the state and federal government have designated health professional shortage areas. So what does that mean? What are the characteristics of these parts of our state?
So that's a really good question. If you look at the federally designated healthcare shortage areas nationwide and in Wisconsin, the majority of them are in rural areas. I think 68% are in rural areas. So most of the underserved areas anyway are rural. The Wisconsin Council on Medical Education and Workforce, which is a group that puts out really good statistics annually, their recent report this fall suggested that by 2035, about 15, 16 years from now, they anticipate that 40% of the current physicians will have retired. That is with a backdrop of the fact that over that period of time, there's supposed to be a 20% increase in demand for physicians in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and only a 4% increase in the supply of physicians. So when we talk about the fact that these shortage areas are very underserved, you know, that folks in rural areas can't get the care they need, specifically the primary care, but specialty care too, and that we really need to do something to improve the situation, it's on track to get significantly worse over time. So not a new problem, but one that's going to be more prevalent as time goes on.
And during the same time, we've got a major group of people that are aging. And you mentioned the physicians are retiring, but as the state as a whole ages, I would imagine the need for healthcare just increases exponentially.
That's right. As the demographics change, as we all get older, you know, our healthcare needs change and increase, and it does progress over time. It's a significant problem. I think the backdrop to this that's really important is to realize that physicians in Wisconsin are really distributed, aren't distributed as they're needed. So, for instance, 28% of our residents are in rural areas, and only 11% of docs are in rural areas. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, the docs are out there. We're just in the wrong spots. And that's where the WARM program really becomes important in order to try to show potential students, future docs, that rural medicine is a blessing, is something that is just a wonderful career, a way to give back, and something that people should be considering. And so we're hopeful that with the efforts of Warham and others in the state, we can make a difference over time. As I mentioned, the program puts about 50% of its students into rural areas as doctors eventually. And the really impressive piece is that more than a third of our students that end up in rural areas end up within 20 miles of their hometown. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it is very cool. So I like to tell people that, you know, if you're a rural community and you're saying, hey, why don't we have a doc? Why aren't we getting a doc? You know, if you give us a few students, one of them's going to come back. And one doctor in a really severely shortaged area could provide care for 30 years, right? So a lot of these small areas, really, their severe need is one or two docs.
So if I could just kind of throw this out there, why are we seeing the shortage? Is it because people don't want to move to rural areas? Is it because the populations tend to be maybe less able to pay? I mean, if you can sum it up in a nutshell, what is it?
You know, I think more than anything, it's lack of understanding or lack of knowledge about what rural medicine is. I practiced medicine in Ladysmith for 10 years. I really enjoyed it. I would really still be there if it weren't for other family-related pieces. And I think that a lot of our students who come through medical school, a lot of the potential college and high school students that think, well, maybe medicine might be for me, but I don't know, they aren't exposed to rural medicine, and they don't see the wonderful career and life it could be. So I think if we do a better job of, you know, letting the kids and students and applicants and medical students out there know that this is an option, people will pick it. You know, I worked with docs up in Ladysmith who had been their entire careers, 30, 35 years, loved it, retired there, and really saw the benefits. So I think it's getting the message out.
Greg Nitsch, you'd like to chime in.
Yeah, one of the things we've tried to do with our Family Health Center program is to support physicians. If you have a caring physician in a rural community, they're kind of on an island. And there's a lot of literature that indicates we can, you know, we have shortage of psychiatrists, mm-hmm. particularly in the north, and more severe shortages for child psychiatrists. So how do you deal with that? And one of the evidence-based approaches is we can put in kind of a care-type coordinator that works with a psychiatrist and with the primary care docs, and we ask the primary care docs to take on some of the load off the psychiatrist, so the psychiatrist can see work at the top of their license. Mm-hmm. And to do that, those primary care docs who are asked to do so much need help. And part of what we try to do in Family Health Center is if you're a primary care doctor and you're in a rural area and you got a patient that has a blown out mouth and it's got pain and sufferings, maybe been to the ER a couple of times, they have no place to go with that person. It's an uncomfortable position to put a physician in. Mm. And so we've come along and said, no, there's a place to go. We're going to set up these dental clinics and you'll have a place to refer that patient. We're trying to do the same thing for, there's a SBIRT, it's an acronym for screening, brief intervention, referral, and treatment. And it's been shown in the Pacific Northwest and in our neighboring state, Minnesota, to save costs and to help by identifying people who have, say, a substance use disorder or maybe a depression. The problem with it is the first part of it works, screening and brief intervention. We've had difficulty in the rural areas with the referral and treatment because there's no place to go.
Right.
So part of it is the, you know, if we want physicians who care a lot about their patients, one of the things I think in a rural practice is, especially if you're there long, you really get to know the families and you have strong provider patient relationships. You don't want that physician to be in the awkward position of not being able to help their patient with a mental health service or substance use treatment service or dental service. So we're trying to backfill on that in the hopes that it'll make that primary practice that we were just discussing more enjoyable.
Dr. Ashok Rai.
You know, to add to the whole training of physicians, the WARM program's been incredible at getting students exposed to rural medicine, but it's that next phase of training that really locks them in, and that's graduate medical education. So here we have so everybody knows when you graduate medical school, yes, you're called doctor, but you're not ready to practice medicine. We have to go through extra training, which is called our residency, mm-hmm. and that's where you pick your specialty. So let's take family medicine, for example. In partnership with UW, we have the residency program here in Eau Claire that Purvey has recently transitioned, and every other year we have a resident that's assigned to Augusta for a rural training program. So that exposure allows them to be trained fully in a rural environment, see what it's like to be the actual doctor in the town, and then to be able to place them in rural America and hopefully local rural America. It's been really successful over here that we're now just awarded a grant to do one on the other side of the state as well, so we can continue to expose medical students when they want to go on to that next phase of training to even more responsibilities in a rural environment. So it's the one step past WARM, which has been an incredible asset to the state, is to provide graduate medical education residency programs in a variety of fields. So we've started with family practice. I definitely see the emergence of general surgery happening in rural environments, and obviously psychiatry and the training and getting them more exposed to rural environments. That's one way to overcome this, and the state of Wisconsin's looked at other ways too, such as funding mechanisms, loan repayments. You know, as residents are looking for jobs and they sit in my office and they're asking for a job, I always kind of try to figure out what their debt load is. And the average debt load of people coming through my office at this time, which is probably about 2 to 3 a week because it's recruitment season, is about $250,000. So they're about $250,000 in the hole before they've received their first paycheck. So
I think I just blacked out when I heard that.
And that's average. I've had some sit in our office in the past month being $500,000 in debt, which is a huge debt load if you think about it. And to have some of that debt load forgiven by encouraging them to practice in a rural environment, the state of Wisconsin continues to do a good job at encouraging that too. I think UW's created a great amount of exposure by having the WARM program to the elected officials there to help that kind of go forward.
With that, let's take our first break. Today on the West Side, we're looking at rural health care in western Wisconsin. Four guests are lending us their time and expertise this hour. Greg Nitsch of Marshfield Clinic, Dr. Ashok Rai of Prevea Health, Dr. Joseph Holt of UW Health, and Ryan Neville of Marshfield Medical Center in Neillsville. We pick up our conversation when we return. If you've got a question or comment, give us a call at 800-228-5615. David in Hudson will get to your call in just a bit, and when we do come back, I also want to talk about underserved populations. So stay tuned. We've got much more discussion to come. This is The West Side.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Earl M. Terry Endowment Fund, a permanent endowment that provides ongoing support to sustain the present and future operation of Wisconsin Public Radio. WPR podcasts let you hear programs whenever you want. Hear shows like To the Best of Our Knowledge and The Politics Podcast. You can find out more about all the WPR podcasts by going to wpr.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to the West Side. We're considering the state of rural health care in western Wisconsin this hour. We have a full panel of guests to help us do this. Greg Nitsch is the director of the Marshfield Clinic Family Health Center in Marshfield. Dr. Ashok Rai is president and CEO of Prevea Health, and those two are in the studio with me. Joining us from our studio in Madison is Dr. Joseph Holt. He's the director of the Wisconsin Academy of Rural Medicine at UW-Madison. And Ryan Neville joins us by phone. He is the chief administrative officer of Marshfield Medical Center, Neillsville. 1-800-228-5615 if you've got a question or a comment. We've got open phone lines for you. If you live in a rural community, walk us through the process that you have to go through in order to get the health care that you need. 1-800-228-5615. So let's go to the phones now without further delay. David in Hudson, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Yes, Dr. David Lawrence. Lawrence, just like the hurricane.
All right.
I'm 88 years old, a physician, still working part-time. I've tried to do telehealth with a retired family practice physician for over a year with no response, contacting radio stations and the Wisconsin Medical Society. I think all you need to do to assist rural people in making decisions is take retired physicians, have them donate 2 hours a day, 5 days a week on the radio for a call-in talk show, because rural people often don't know whether they should or should not go to the doctor, and this certainly is a first line of processing their health care. Many of the visits by rural individuals are for small issues that could well be decided on the telephone. Again, I've contacted radio stations and Wisconsin Medical Society and don't even get a response. The family practitioner, who's very experienced and willing to help me, is Dr. Joel Steckler, retired from Baldwin Clinic. And he and I are willing to give the whole thing a start, and we've tried to do it. It wouldn't cost any significant amount of money. We could do it through our telephones at home, and I've had radio experience because my family owned radio and TV stations in Cleveland, and I'm more than willing to help and devote the time, but I certainly have to have at least cooperation of some medical entity and the telemedicine system.
Gotcha. David, thank you so much for that. That's a novel idea. I like it. Let me go to Dr. Joseph Holt down in Madison, because we had a previous caller that wasn't able to stay on the phone, but she wanted you specifically to talk about telemedicine. What do you think about David's proposal here? I mean, is it that simple that people just, don't know, that the word's not getting out?
You know, I would back up just a moment just to mention that, thank you for all of the care he's given. If he's 88 years old,
absolutely,
and still practicing to some extent, but that's exactly what we're hoping future docs will find, careers where they still want to be working at 88 years old in a rural area. So that's pretty neat. In terms of telemedicine, telehealth, I think that's a key component to rural care. And I know when I was at Marshfield, and certainly even more now, they've been huge advocates for telemedicine, for teleconsultation and that sort of thing. So it's an important piece of the puzzle, but even more important is that physician or primary care person in the communities, because honestly, I think we all have heard stories and know of folks who, didn't seek the care they needed, didn't get the preventive care they should have gotten because they didn't have a physician or they didn't have a relationship with a doc that they really trusted. So having doctors in these areas that patients can become comfortable with and start to call their docs, that's really the key piece. But telemedicine is very important as well. As was mentioned before, it is challenging currently because of the government and insurance reimbursement piece. I think that's already come a long way. There are a lot of advocates for this, so I think that will change over time. UW-Madison and UW-Health is working on this as well. So I think there are a lot of big forces pushing for this, so I think it will get better. One thing I did want to mention about a prior comment, the importance of residency positions or further training in Wisconsin. That is really key. We train our students in the rural track here and encourage them to consider rural medicine. And then when they get out of medical school and they go on to their next step of training, which was, as mentioned, is residency, half of the students end up having to go out of state for their residency because there aren't enough spots in the state. So I really congratulate everybody who is working on getting additional residency spots in the state. I think it's something the legislature should be aware of and foster as well. I can say that even though we don't have enough spots in the state to train the residents we need to, it is pretty impressive that we're seeing in our medical students even though half of them leave the state to do residency, 90% of them still end up back in Wisconsin. So most of these folks want to come back here and serve and take care of people.
That's encouraging. Let's go now to, I want to go back to Ryan Neville, Chief Administrative Officer, Marshfield Medical Center, Neillsville. I want to talk about underserved populations. So we're talking about, you know, parts of rural Wisconsin being underserved in that there's just not enough docs to go around. But, you know, what other populations are considered underserved and or vulnerable in this discussion in your region?
Well, specifically, I'll talk about the Plain community, which are the Amish and Mennonite, make up about a third of our county. And quite ironically, this morning before this phone call, I met with 29 elders that made the trip to talk about their health care concerns and opening up access to them. That community is a different culture in the sense that preventative care is not at the top of their mind, and affordability is. And so as we've seen over the past 3 years, we've seen a steady incline of Plain community patients coming in here for care that they've been kind of holding off. Or, as the gentleman told me this morning, going all the way to Ohio to get care to save several thousand dollars is what they're used to.
Hmm.
It's a key demographic in our community. They're good people. They use our stores, and we want them to use our hospital. So that's probably the biggest underserved population I deal with.
And let's go to Greg Nitsch as well. You wanted to jump in.
Yeah, of course, our focus is underserved populations. And a couple of points I'd make that your listeners may not be aware of. Sometimes a population may have insurance but still be underserved because they don't have the financial means. And most people know that even commercial insurance has moved towards larger and larger deductibles.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're living paycheck to paycheck, and you've got a $3,000 deductible, you might as well be uninsured.
Right.
And so people are making decisions on whether they're going to buy pills or food. That kind of stuff is happening. And so a couple of populations that again, on the oral health side of things, most people aren't aware that our veterans don't have comprehensive oral health benefits. So unless you're 100% service disabled or your oral disability is relating to your service, you can't get payment through the VA or services through the VA.
Hmm.
And if you don't have money to pay for today's dental care, a lot of vets in our state are going without and living in pain. And as we set up our dental centers, we learned from local veterans, county veteran service officers, that before we started this, that was their number one health-related problem, that vets would come to them. And we're pleased that we've largely gotten rid of that problem in and around our dental centers, but we're aware that it exists across the state. Another group... Another group that's really important to recognize is there is no dental benefit for Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
And so elderly people who have problems eating and that because of pain in their teeth and need dentures, a lot of them can't afford it. And we see a lot of those folks in our dental centers. We help them get the dentures they need.
Ryan Neville, you wanted to chime in.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with underserved being our kind of our working class in these industries. As we, one of our key strategies is occupational health. And as we enter these organizations, manufacturers, the utilization rate of the employees there is very low. So a lot of them have not been to the doctor or seen preventative visits for many years, solely because of the cost of care and the high deductibles of their plans. And then what happens is there's a catastrophic event, and then that impacts the employer's rate of premium going forward into the next year. But I could not agree more that our working class or the folks with high deductibles are extremely underserved right now.
Well, with that, let's take our final break because we've got a lot more to talk about. And I want to talk about, this reimbursement and just the high deductibles. It all boils down sometimes to money and politics, it seems like, because we had, this Affordable Care Act that was sold as a type of a solution, but it's not without its issues as well. So I want to talk about that when we return. All four of our guests are staying with us to wrap up this hour's discussion about rural health care in Western Wisconsin. Greg Nitsch of Marshfield Clinic, Dr. Ashok Rai of Prevea Health, Dr. Joseph Holt of UW Health, and Ryan Neville of Marshfield Medical Center, Neillsville. I'm Rich Kramer. Stay tuned as we pick up our conversation. If you've got a question or a comment, do give us a call. The number is 1-800-228-5615. This is The West Side.
Did you know you can donate your car to Wisconsin Public Radio and get a tax deduction? We take trucks, too, and boats, RVs, even snowmobiles. We'll tow it away for free at a time that's convenient for you, and Wisconsin Public Radio will get a donation in your name. Turn your old vehicle into the programs you love. Go to WPR.org/support. Thanks.
Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin Association of Nurse Anesthetists, celebrating CRNAs, delivering 45 million anesthetics nationwide each year. More is at WIANA.com.
You can give just one afternoon a month and bring joy to a neighbor through participation in the Trinit Team Caregiver Program and its Joy Day celebrations featuring snacks, bingo, and companionship for the elderly and disabled. Information at 715-858-9808.
Welcome back to The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. This hour, we're taking a look at rural health care options in western Wisconsin. Four guests join me for this conversation. In the studio, we have Dr. Ashok Rai, President and CEO of Prevea Health, and Greg Nitsch, Director of the Family Health Center for Marshfield Clinic. And by phone, we've got in our studio in Madison, we've got Dr. Joseph Holt, Director of the Wisconsin Academy for Rural Medicine at UW Health in Madison, and by phone, Ryan Neville. He is Chief Administrative Officer of Marshfield Medical Center, Neillsville. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. So I want to talk about the politics in healthcare. We've already talked about the CBO playing a pretty interesting role in terms of telemedicine. So, how do healthcare organizations work within legal and political structures to care for patients? You know, we've got the Affordable Care Act. A lot of people seem to like that. Some people hate it because some of the plans have very high deductibles. It's seems like a very challenging and even uncertain future. So how do you work within that system, Dr. Ashok Rai?
So for the last year, I've commuted between Wisconsin and Washington, D.C., serving as the board chair for our trade association, AMGA, and having these conversations. And I can say they're, you know, in all honesty, extremely frustrating. I actually testified in front of Congress for 2 hours this summer and on these subjects. And there's a significant disconnect amongst elected officials and those of us who took an oath to provide care and how we should best do it. Obviously, there's a limited set of resources and how you distribute those resources, but the current solutions that stand out there only a lot of times address one component of healthcare, and that's paying for it. But healthcare is so much more than just taking care of you when you're sick and you need it. So much of the discussion needs to pivot on how do we keep all communities, specifically rural underserved communities, healthy, so they need us less. Mm-hmm. And those are discussions that are much harder and much more politically charged, believe it or not, than trying to find ways to pay for it when you're sick. And I think the balance of getting America healthier, which is the only way we're going to spend less, and taking that attitude to all markets, rural and urban, are where our balance is lacking. There's a term that's used a lot in the last, I'd say, 2 years, but it's been around since all of us trained, in the social determinants of healthcare. Access to a provider is a social determinant of healthcare. In other words, in these rural environments, access to a good provider is part of being healthy, but access to nutritional food, access to the ability to exercise, to move, the education around all of that, oral health, a huge social determinant of healthcare. There's so many other aspects that don't get in the political light because everybody's worried about the person that has a very large bill or a high deductible, but they're forgetting of all the other components in healthcare that aren't being addressed. So as we address underserved and rural areas, just putting a provider in a market, so just putting a physician or a dentist in X town isn't going to make that town any healthier. Mm-hmm. It is going to address one component of it, but we need to continuously look at access to nutrition, access to movement, and really a focus not only on taking care of communities when they're sick, but healthy. A local provider can do a lot of that, but there needs to be a support system around it as well.
Greg Nips.
So you brought up the Affordable Care Act and the swirling controversy around that.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't understand there are two big pieces to that. And one is for individuals who can't afford deductibles, who are below 138% of the federal poverty level, the Affordable Care Act was designed to provide them access to the medical assistance program. The medical assistance program does not have those high deductibles. So that is a perfect fit. Now, a lot of states rejected the Affordable Care Act. We were fortunate in Wisconsin that Governor Walker at least felt that everybody under poverty should have the protection of Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped maybe 140,000 people in Wisconsin get closer to first dollar coverage for care because they can't afford the deductibles. What he didn't do is the folks between poverty and 138% of poverty would be moved and provided options in the exchange, in the federal exchange, where you talked about the concern, at least in bronze plans and so forth, with high deductibles.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be a continuing debate in the state about whether we ought to be helping those folks get into a situation where they have broader benefits. From our perspective, we know the importance of oral health. There is no oral health benefit for adults in the exchange. So we would much rather have them have access to oral health services through the Medicaid program.
Let's go back to the phones. I believe we've got Dr. Florence back on the line. Thanks for calling back in. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, one of your speakers talked about the Amish. I happen to be from the Amish area outside Canton, Ohio, which is the largest Amish community in the world, and I know that they're very, very basic, simple things that they don't know that could be answered by telemedicine or telehealth. And as I say, a voluntary thing could be set up that would serve at least some of the basic needs and take away the unnecessary visits for minuscule items, which I have been told by family practitioners are very common amongst rural people. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for calling back. Greg Nitsch, go ahead.
Yeah, I think what the speaker has or the caller has said is important. One of the ways we try to address help for people, short of having them come in, is we have a 24-hour, 365-day nurse line that people can call in an 800 number,
mm-hmm.
and they can get advice from nurses. And we found that also is a piece of the solution to this, to help people decide whether they need to go to the ER right away, whether it's watchful waiting, and they can get that advice for smaller things.
So we are right up against the top of the hour here, and I wanted to go to Dr. Holt down in Madison. I'll go round robin, I guess. So where do we go from here? I mean, telemedicine seems to have some promise. You've got a lot of people like the doctor who called in they're willing to volunteer in order to get the word out about these things. So, you know, what are your different organizations, and I'll start with you, Dr. Holt, going to do moving forward to try to improve the access and the understanding out there?
Yeah, I think programs like this, just getting the word out as to the fact that this really is a huge problem. From our perspective, training students, we're going to continue to get these students into the right spot as rural docs. I think if there was one thing that, you know, I could say now to the community, to whoever's listening, if you're a parent, if you're a grandparent, you know, if you have kids who are interested in helping people, considering medicine or maybe aren't but would be great docs, encourage them to take that path. And it's beyond, as was mentioned before, it's beyond doctors. You know, we need nurses, CRNAs, physical therapists, pharmacists, the whole gamut of healthcare. So encourage these kids who are out there now thinking about options to consider healthcare.
Ryan Neville over there in Neillsville, what's your take on this? I mean, is the future bright in terms of making things better or at least easier to get access to healthcare in rural areas?
I think it's as bright as an organization adopts the technology to do so. The telehealth technology is there. We continue to kind of embed it in operations that every specialty has to have a telehealth arm that's growing. So taking virtual care into the workplace, we are currently vetting an idea in our rural health clinic or just outside our rural health clinic of having a solely telehealth clinic. Not everybody feels comfortable having a telehealth visit. They want to see the doctor one-on-one, and they want to touch them, you know, all those things. But it's us to get out there and show the value of the accessibility of the technology and make sure that it's not just offered but encouraged.
All right, and let's Greg Nitsch.
Yeah, we talked about
there we go.
We talked about the social determinants of health, and one of that is the ability to have a job. And the solution for our rural communities is we also have to build on economic prosperity within those communities. And one of the ways we're just trying to do that is to remove health-related barriers to work. Mm-hmm. So when Governor Walker went around the state, he said, you know, how can you help employers? Help employers by giving them workers who can pass a drug test.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can help get people over their addiction, we can add to the workforce.
Definitely. And Dr. Ashok Rai, final word.
I would agree with all of my colleagues and say that, you know, we take the ball from the WARM program and continue to develop residency programs in rural America so we can continue the training progress, convince people it's a great place to practice medicine, and then surround those people with the right resources around the social determinants of healthcare, more than just buildings, but really investing and partnering with employers to move their factories into rural America because the populations are healthier.
That's our time for today on the West Side. I'd like to thank all of our guests for their help in making this program possible. Greg Nitsch of the Family Health Center Incorporated, Dr. Ashok Rai of Prevea Health, Dr. Joseph Holt of the Wisconsin Academy for Rural Medicine, and Ryan Neville of Marshfield Medical Center, Neillsville. Thanks to every listener and to our callers. Thank you to Team West Side for producing this program, including Catherine Thomas, Mort Cypress, Kate Spranger, and Dean Collenbeck. I'm Rich Kramer. Have a safe and productive week. We will be off next Monday morning in observance of Martin Luther King Day, but we'll chat again Monday, January 28th. So stay tuned. We'll be back. We'll chat again Monday the 28th.